I've called this sermon The Pig Incident. So you probably have a pretty good idea of what I'm talking about or which passage I'm referring to. But if not, let's turn to Mark's Gospel chapter 5. And I'm going to read the first 20 verses from that. You'll see, obviously, as I read, why I've called it the pig incident. And maybe it should be the incident with the pigs in the plural, because there's more than one pig in this incident. It says, "They, the disciples, went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs. No one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he'd often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, 'What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me.' For Jesus had said to him, 'Come out of this man, you impure spirit.' Then Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' 'My name is Legion,' he replied, 'for we are many.' And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, 'Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them.' He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who'd seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus didn't let him. He said, 'Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you.' So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed." Over the past months, as we've been looking at the many, many miracles that Jesus did whilst on earth, we've seen that we could divide those miracles into different categories. Miracles of provision, for example, such as the feeding of the 4,000 and the 5,000, or when he turned the water into wine at Cana. Miracles of healing, we've seen how he gave sight to the blind, hearing to the deaf, speech to those who couldn't speak. We've seen Jesus healing every sickness and disease, including leprosy, bleeding, withered limbs, all that kind of thing. We've seen miracles of deliverance, such as this one, how he restores sanity and health to those who are possessed by evil spirits. And we've seen miracles of resurrection, how he's restored life to those who died. We've seen basically how there was never any situation beyond the power, the love, the compassion of Jesus. And that gives us hope, I think, for our own lives and for those in our community, because Jesus is still able to provide, to heal, to deliver, and to raise to life, even in our own day and age, because he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so we can all have hope. We've seen how miracles can show us different truths as well. For example, you know, they underline spiritual truth. Some of the healings of the blind have led us to conversations about spiritual sight. Some of his miracles expose the hypocrisy and unbelief of people like the Pharisees. They were more concerned about Jesus healing on the Sabbath than they were about people's well-being. Some miracles have seemed perhaps a bit strange, such as when those friends, you know, literally raised the roof or made a hole in the roof to get their friend to Jesus, or the one where Jesus seemed quite unfriendly and rude to that woman begging for mercy for her daughter. And I think, you know, today's miracle, when Jesus delivers a man with an impure spirit by casting out the spirits into a herd of pigs, that's up there with one of the strange miracles, isn't it? But there's a lot to learn from every miracle that Jesus did. His power is available for his followers today. He said, whoever believes in me will do the works I've been doing, and they'll do even greater things than these because I'm going to the Father. So the miraculous and the mundane go hand in hand, and they show us more of who God is, and they remind us of his intimate involvement in our everyday lives. And this miracle that we're considering today is found in three Gospels. We can read about it in Matthew chapter 8, verses 28 to 34, in Mark chapter 5, as we've done this morning, verses 1 to 20, and in Luke chapter 8, verses 26 to 39. There are slight differences in the story. In Matthew's gospel, two men are healed, whereas in the others, it's just the one man. And the place is a bit ambiguous. You know, is it the region of the Gadarenes or the Gerasenes? You know, we don't fully know where all these places are or necessarily understand those differences. But the main point is certainly clear. You know, a man is delivered from demon possession, and this herd of pigs, which is the unusual feature in the story, is in all three Gospels. Now, we might think, well, what are these pigs doing here anyway? Because to the Jews, pigs were unclean animals. God's law to Moses had said, the pig is also unclean. Although it has a divided hoof, it doesn't chew the cud. You're not to eat their meat or touch their carcasses. But this was predominantly a Gentile area, so presumably this large herd of pigs belonged to the Gentiles. You know, pig farming was a valuable source of income to them. And some people have said, well, Jesus obviously doesn't care about animals or he wouldn't have let these pigs drown. But, you know, I don't really think we can take that from what we're reading here, because it's clear, you know, that Jesus said that God knows every sparrow, so God knows and cares about animals as well. But it's true that, as David said in Psalm 8, God is mindful of man. He said, what is mankind that you're mindful of them? And every miracle that we see Jesus doing shows his concern for people. The individual matters to God. People matter to God. And everything that Jesus did and said underlines that fact for us. And this individual, this man, is in a very sorry state when he met Jesus. Mark says that he lived in the tombs. No one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he'd often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and he broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. Luke says that for a long time this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house. He'd lived in the tombs. Matthew speaks of the violence that he did. You know, the man is in torment and he's feared by everybody because of that. He's living an isolated, miserable life. He's not living normally. There's nothing civilized or sociable about his existence. He's violent, he's unsettled, he's self-harming. And all three Gospels speak of demon possession. It's more than just physical illness or mental illness. The root cause of the problem here we don't know, but it's spiritual. We don't know how this man got in this state. We don't know what influences had been on him. We don't know anything about his backstory. But it's clear from the fact that when Jesus asks the name of the evil spirit, the answer is legion. This problem is deep-seated. A Roman legion had between 5,000 and 6,000 men in it. And even if we take that number figuratively, you know, there were a lot of evil spirits in this man. He'd got a really big problem. He was suffering deeply. He was dominated by the demons within him. He wasn't able to live a normal life. He was controlled by those evil spirits. And probably we feel, you know, disquiet or fear even as we read this account. It's out of our control. You know, he's living away from people in tombs. You know, he's removed from society, and we still like to remove from sight everything that disturbs us and is not under our control. You know, it's easier to remove the mentally ill and the dying from our sight, putting them in institutions, because then we don't have to confront the pain of loss or don't have to face difficult questions of where God is in these tragic situations. We like to have an ordered, rosy world where everything goes according to our plans. But unfortunately, life has a habit of reminding us that that's not reality. But this story, nonetheless, is encouraging to us because it shows that even when a situation is completely beyond our control, it's not beyond God's. You know, if you take nothing else from this story, take that fact. There's no situation beyond God's control. He's able to work miracles in the worst conditions, in the worst situation, in the darkness. He shines forth the light of the world in the despair. He brings hope to our sorrow and grief. He brings comfort and strength. There's no situation that God can't change for the better. And so there's no place for hopelessness in our lives. The God of all hope lives in us. Paul said, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit." That's the hope that can lighten our darkness and end our despair. The Psalms remind us that we can cry to God out of the depths, and God hears us and answers us. Now, we've seen when looking at some miracles that people approach Jesus for help. Sometimes they reach out to touch him in their desperation. Sometimes they cry out to him. But in this situation, Jesus sees what's going on and he reacts to it instantly. Mark says that the demon within the man shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." As soon as Jesus encountered the man, he did something about the situation. He spoke words of power and authority to the impure spirit. Even the demons recognize the authority and the presence of Jesus, Son of the Most High God. They know their time's numbered. They know that they can't inflict suffering and misery on people forever. There's an appointed time for God to deal with evil, and there's nothing they can do about that. It must have seemed quite a bizarre conversation between the demons and Jesus, but it shows us the reality of the spiritual world and the authority of the Word of God. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." And he gave them permission. Now, I don't know why Jesus did that, but it's clear that Jesus did what was necessary to deliver the man. He spoke with authority, and the demons had to submit to that authority. Better for the impure spirits to go into the pigs than to go into someone else and torment them. Jesus said in Luke's gospel, "When an impure spirit comes out of a person, it goes through arid places seeking rest and doesn't find it. Then it says, 'I will return to the house I left.' When it arrives, it finds the house swept clean and put in order. Then it goes and takes seven other spirits, more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. And the final condition of that person is worse than the first." So we can't be delivered successfully unless we're then filled with God's Spirit. In sending the spirits into the pigs, Jesus made it possible for the man to have new life and to be filled with God's Spirit. And when we're delivered, we need to be filled with God's Spirit. We need his greater power in us and in our lives, so that we don't succumb again to the same old problems. However strange it may seem to us to have these demons begging Jesus to be allowed into the pigs, what we see from the conversation, I think, is that Jesus is the one in charge. He is the one making the decisions. His authority, his power are greater than even a legion of demons. And to be filled with the Spirit is so important for every one of us following Jesus. When we give our lives to Jesus, we become new creations. The old has gone, the new has come. And we see the change in this man immediately. He's dressed and in his right mind, Mark says. He's grateful for what Jesus has done. He begs to stay with him. Now he's a disciple, a follower, because of this miracle. And that's what happens to us when God comes into our lives. There's a radical change. God's power touches our lives and we're never the same again. Whether we understand that or not, immediately, an encounter with Jesus has the power to transform our lives. But as we've seen in so many miracles, there's a divided response. The man's grateful. He wants to follow Jesus. He wants to live for him now. And Jesus gives him a mission. He says, go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you. And the man does this faithfully. And that produces a response of amazement in the people. It says at the end, he began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. And this reminds us, I think, that evangelism starts at home. And it can often be the hardest mission for us to go home to our own people and tell them how much God has done for us. You know, our families might not want to listen. Our neighbours might not want to know, but that's our first mission field. The apostles had to be witnesses in Jerusalem before they could be witnesses in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And we've got this task from God too, to go into our community to tell people how much the Lord has done for us and how he's had mercy on us. Goldthorpe, Fernscoe, Bolton on Dearne, that's our immediate mission field. We may live further afield, Wath, South Kirby, Upton, Wombwell, Barnsley. But our first task is to go home. God may well send us further afield in time, but we have to prove faithful in the little things first. This man did exactly what Jesus had told him to, and people were amazed. And if we will do the same, our witness can make a difference. It really can. Now, we've all got a story to tell. God has spoken to us all in different ways. We've got different testimonies of how God has had mercy on us. Don't think that your story isn't important. Never think that the changes to your life go unnoticed by your family and community. You know, it's easy to feel that other people have got more impressive testimonies than us, or we feel we're not important. But we've all got influence. We all have people we meet regularly, people who know us, people who are watching us even when we don't realise it. And these people are our mission field. This man had seen a tremendous miracle, but so have we. Once we were part of the kingdom of darkness, just as he was, even if we weren't possessed by a legion of demons. But now we're part of the kingdom of light. We're saved, we're redeemed, restored. Instead of being naked and full of wounds from cutting himself, this man is now dressed and in his right mind. And that's a picture of what God does for each one of us. He washes us by his word. He clothes us in garments of salvation and robes of righteousness so that we've got a story to tell where the emphasis is wholly on what the Lord has done for us. But if the man and the people that he spoke to were grateful and amazed, the majority of people were afraid. It says, then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Luke tells us they were overcome by fear. They were more concerned about the loss of income from the loss of this herd of pigs than they were about the miraculous deliverance of one man. They'd been afraid of that man and all that he represented. They couldn't control him. They were afraid of him for that reason. But they were even more afraid of Jesus because his power was total. This miracle didn't bring them deliverance. Instead, they wanted Jesus to go away as soon as possible and leave them alone. And miracles will always divide opinion. Jesus didn't meet with universal acclaim. For everyone who said he's done everything well, there were those who begged him to leave them alone or who were angry about his miracles. And we shouldn't be surprised if our lives meet with similar division. Some people will want to know more about our testimony, and others will not. And all God requires of us is the faithfulness to tell other people how much the Lord has done for us. You know, we have got to leave the rest with him. We're co-workers with him, but he's the one who makes things grow. He's the one who brings spiritual fruit from our labours. You know, I find it quite frustrating that so often we don't know what happened to people after the miracles that Jesus did in their lives. We tend to only have glimpses of what happened next. But we've got to leave that with God. You know, he's told us all we need to know and to thrive spiritually. And in our own lives, we don't always know what happens behind the scenes of our testimony. We don't always know what God's doing in people's lives after we've told them our stories. But that's not our problem. Our task is simply to be faithful, to speak of what God's done for us and how he's had mercy on us. So what have we learnt from this strange miracle then? What do we get from it today? First of all, there's no situation greater than Jesus. Of all the miracles we see Jesus performing, this is, you know, the most, one of the most amazing. This transformation from despair to sanity and worship's astounding. And we might be facing some really horrendous situations in life, but we've got to hold on to the fact that we worship a miracle-working God. No work too hard for him. In faith, receive from him, we sing. We learn that individuals matter to God, and we've always got to realise the importance of people to God. People are God's currency. He cares about people. Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost, and he's still looking for people to save. This one man mattered more than the 2,000 pigs. And sometimes in God's economy, things don't make sense to us. But we've always got to remember the importance of the individual to the good shepherd. He goes seeking for that one lost sheep. He says there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who don't need to repent. We've seen that mission starts at home. Who we are at home and in our community matters enormously. It's always sad when we hear of famous Christian leaders sinning or failing in any sphere. But it's especially sad, you know, to hear of sexual or financial misconduct in the church. Because our faithfulness at home, our faithfulness in small things matters to God. Paul says it's required that those who've been given a trust must prove faithful. Integrity matters. Honesty matters. Faithfulness matters. If we're faithful with small things, God can trust us with bigger things. This man wanted to follow Jesus, but when he was told to go home and witness there, he obeyed faithfully. You know, our obedience and our faithfulness are huge witnesses in themselves. And finally, we've seen that miracles divide opinions. Some people were amazed, they realized the enormity of what had happened, but others saw only problems, not solutions. What kind of people are we? Are we those who surf on the waves of what God's doing with gladness? Or are we those who see only problems and react with fear? And it's a challenge always because miracles disrupt the status quo. They leave us with that sense that we're not in control. But that's not a bad thing. God is in control. And if God is in control, we can rest secure. We don't have to have all the answers. We don't have to understand. May God grant us the faith to trust him for the miraculous. Help us to tell our God stories at home in our local community. And may he help us to live faithfully before everybody so that others can see and know who God is and what he's done. Amen.